It is Tuesday, January 12th, Universal Time, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Coming up in this half hour, we will talk to VOA's Pentagon correspondent to get the latest news on Iran detaining two small U.S. Navy vessels. We will speak to our national correspondent, Jim Malone, to get a preview of President Barack Obama's final State of the Union address. And we will talk to a VOA Kurdish service editor to get the latest on a terrorist attack that killed foreign tourists in Istanbul. It's all ahead on International Edition. The crew of two small U.S. Navy vessels are being held by Iran. But Pentagon officials say Tehran has assured them that the U.S. crew and boats will be promptly returned. A senior U.S. defense official told VOA on Tuesday that there are a total of 10 sailors on the two boats, which were traveling between Kuwait and Bahrain when the U.S. lost contact with them. Well, for more on this breaking story, we are joined on the phone by VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Michael.
Well, what can you tell us about this situation?
Well, the situation is still very fluid, so a lot of details are still coming in, but it looks like these 10 sailors were in two different naval crafts, and they were going from Kuwait to Bahrain. It appears that they were doing some sort of training exercise. One of the ships had some mechanical problems that caused the ships to drift, and the next thing you know, the United States lost contact with these 10 sailors. Of course, that's not normal, so immediately officials were getting on the phone with the Iranians saying, what's going on? It appears that everything is going to be resolved very quickly. In fact, an official told me that the Iranians said that they would, quote, promptly be allowed to continue on their journey. So this could just be a matter of a few more minutes or hours before everything is settled.
Well, Carla, have you heard any other cases of such an incident happening before?
I have not. This is Iran has taken people into custody, not U.S. Sailors before. So this is something that has really caught the recent administration off guard. You know, they have taken some ships, the Mirsk, last year into custody and held hostage, some people would say. But the bottom line is when something goes wrong, mechanical failures happen, there needs to be constant communication between the two nations. As one official was saying around here, the first thing you don't do is take them into custody and take over the vessel. You know, communication is the key. So that is something that does not bode well for the Iranians. However, diplomacy has been working, as it appears that these 10 sailors are going to be released soon.
Well, just quickly, how much concern do you detect among U.S. officials about the fate of those sailors?
Well, people do not seem to be concerned at the moment. Like I said, there has been that communication, but this is a very tense time between the U.S. and Iran. This is less than a month after the U.S. officials claimed that the Iranians test-fired some rockets right by U.S. boats, and they called that highly unprofessional. And this is just not a good time for this to be going on, especially with all of the different different changes that are going to be underway as the nuclear reform rolls out with the nuclear agreement. This is just not something that needs to be happening right now.
Well, thank you so much to VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb for bringing us the latest on that situation in the Gulf. Thank you, Carla. Okay, well, moving on to U.S. politics, and for the seventh and final time of his presidency, Barack Obama will stand before Congress and the American public in a few hours to lay out his vision not only for his remaining months in office, but also for the future of the United States. Joining me in the studio for a preview of the speech is VOA's national correspondent, Jim Malone. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Michael.
Well, what do you expect President Obama to highlight in his speech today?
The White House has pretty strongly indicated don't expect the usual sort of list of proposals they want to get through Congress in his last year in office. That wouldn't be realistic anyway, because he's not too popular with Republicans in Congress. What they're saying is expect a sort of optimistic, upbeat assessment of the country, of his record, of his legacy, and where he'd like to see the country go. And of course, that would play into the election debate, which does not give pause.
Well, what kind of tone do you expect President Obama to use in this speech?
I think he's going to highlight the positive, accentuate the positive. I think he's going to look at his record a bit. He's going to look at the economy here in the United States, which is always a chief concern. And I think he'll spend some time trying to reassure Americans about the threat of terrorism and, their concerns about national security issues, which have been raised nonstop by Republican presidential candidates.
And also perhaps by this incident with Iran detaining these two U.S. vessels.
We'll have to see how this plays out in the address this evening. Maybe he'll have some sort of announcement during the address. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, you were telling me earlier that you also expect Obama to say something about the Iran nuclear deal. What is he likely to talk about on that issue?
Right. If you're looking at his record over the past 7 years, two things stand out. His health care law, number one, and on the foreign policy side, it has to be the Iran nuclear deal. I'm sure he's going to be in full defense mode about that with a lot of Republican critics and, of course, the presidential contenders. I really do think the overhang of the presidential campaign, the negative narrative that the Republicans have put forward, has got him in a mood where he wants to try to counter that tonight. Whether he'll be able to and sort of turn around some of the poll numbers, we'll have to see.
Well, and just to wrap up here, how do you think Obama will keep in mind, his desire to see a Democrat elected in this year's election in his speech? How will he address that topic?
I think you'll see a thread from these are the things we've achieved, these are the gains we've made, and what's the best way to keep them going? He probably won't explicitly say elect the Democrat to succeed me, but I'm sure a lot of people will be able to draw that conclusion.
Thanks so much to VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone.
Thank you.
Well, VOA coverage of President Obama's State of the Union address to the nation begins at 0200 Universal Time on Wednesday. That is Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Washington time. The two-hour program will feature VOA anchor Mil Arcega, as well as Jim Malone, and VOA congressional correspondents Cindy Sain and Michael Bowman. Well, it's time now to check our online reactions to the top story of President Obama's State of the Union address. International Edition social media correspondent G. Abby Lee joins us in the studio. Hi, G.
Hi, Michael.
So what are people saying about this Obama address that's coming up?
Well, the address is definitely one of the trending stories on Facebook right now. It seems like many people are looking forward to listening to President Obama's final State of the Union address in less than 4 hours. The excitement is almost palpable here in D.C. with all the State of the Union address watch parties. Yes, that's
a thing.
Are
you going to one?
I am.
Great.
And hashtag SOTU16 being one of the top 10 trending hashtags in the district.
So what are some of the people who are some of the people actually invited to this address?
Michael, that's actually one of the controversies trending on Twitter. One of the big questions people wanted answered was, who invited Kim Davis to the State of the Union address?
Kim Davis.
Mm-hmm, unless you've been living under a rock, you have heard of the infamous lady who refused to issue licenses to gay couples and was jailed for a short period of time. Davis was a clerk in the state of Kentucky, and she also made headlines when she argued Pope Francis of the Catholic Church is in support of her decision.
Well, who did invite her to this address? I guess it wasn't Obama, huh?
No, it wasn't. That question wasn't answered for a while, but The Hill just reported the Family Research Council arranged for her to be in the House audience along with her attorney. The FRC is on Twitter at FRCDC, and it did tweet about the address, but didn't mention inviting her.
Well, what is the public reaction to this development?
One person wrote, Kim Davis refused to follow law, discriminated against gay couples. Her invite is an insult to every LGBT American. And Michael, I looked everywhere, but it was pretty hard to find a supportive tweet about her attendance. And in related news, ABC News Politics tweeted, one seat in Florida's guest box will be left empty. That's the First Lady's guest box during hashtag SOTU to honor victims of gun violence. And Senator Gary Peters tweeted, he's pleased to see that the president invited a Syrian refugee as one of his guests. Michael?
Thank you so much, G, for that wrap-up. You can follow G on Twitter at G Abby Lee, and our program is there, too. We are at VOA_IE. And I'm also on Twitter. You can find me at Michael_Lippin. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute. NASA is taking the potential threat posed by near-Earth objects, such as asteroids and comets, more seriously than ever, and has established the new Planetary Defense Coordination Office. The space agency says the new office will oversee all of its efforts in finding and characterizing all celestial objects that travel close to Earth as they orbit the Sun. It will also coordinate any actions within and outside of NASA that may be needed to respond to such potential threats. Near-Earth objects are found by astronomers who use a worldwide network of ground-based telescopes as well as NASA's space-based NEOWISE infrared telescope. So far, astronomers have discovered more than 13,500 near-Earth objects, which vary in size from small boulders to those that are hundreds of kilometers in diameter. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
I'm Michael Lippin, and you're listening to VOA's International Edition. A suicide bomber suspected of links to the Islamic State militant group has blown himself up in Istanbul's historic Sultanahmet Square. For the latest on Tuesday's deadly attack that appeared to target foreign tourists in the Turkish city, I spoke earlier to VOA Turkish Service editor Emre Elçi.
The latest announcement that was being made by the mayor of Istanbul that there were 11 people who died at the explosion and 15 were injured.
Well, one of those who was killed was the bomber himself, right?
Yes, but he's not counted in this number because we were said that 9 of the people who were died by the explosion were Germans and 2 of them were South Koreans and 15 were injured, as I said, and they are also all foreign nationals who happened to be there when the bomb went off.
So the death toll has actually gone up to 11, including 2 South Koreans.
Exactly. 9 Germans and 2 South Koreans. And when we actually see what the officials have said so far, none of them actually gave any name of any group that's supposed to be responsible for the attack. But they said that the person who committed the suicide bombing was coming from Syria and had a Syrian ID.
So is there any indication in Turkey that this was perpetrated by the Islamic State, or is that still speculation?
It's not a fact so far, because everybody is speculating that it's being done by the ISIS, a member of ISIS. But as I said, none of the officials have yet announced that it was conducted by ISIS.
Well, how unusual is a deadly suicide bombing in this particular part of Istanbul, which is so popular with tourists?
Yes, as you said, it is very popular by tourists, and you can see people coming from all over the world. That's why Turkish authorities pay enough attention to that area, that no bomb is going to be going off, or there is no attacking by any sort of. But I have lived there. I grew up actually in this part of the city. And while I was there, I personally experienced 3 bomb explosions there. But none of them were deadly. They were actually conducted by pro-Kurdish groups. This has been the first time that ISIS conducted a deadly attack in Istanbul. But when we look at the nature of the attack, we can see that it has been done in Istanbul and it has been directed against the national foreign nationals in the city, which is kind of which can be seen as a metaphor for, you know, attacking Turks, but at the same time attacking the West, the world.
Right. And what kind of damage could this do to tourism in Turkey?
Well, of course, in the short term, we can expect that there will be a lot of cancellations of the reservations that have already been done, especially from Germany and from Europe. But on the long run, we can see that people will definitely, again, rebuild their trust to Turkish government, because bombs have gone off before in Turkey, and this has had a negative impact on tourism. But over a long run, it will recover.
Well, thank you so much to VOA Turkish Service Editor Emre Elçi for joining us on International Edition.
Thank you very much for having me.
Europe's immigration crisis has taken a new turn after reports that New Year's Eve attacks on women in Cologne, Germany, and other European cities were organized by groups of migrants. Swedish authorities now have to answer allegations that police covered up similar attacks on women in Sweden. As VOA's Zlatica Hook reports, EU governments are struggling to stem anti-immigrant sentiment triggered by a wave of migration from northern Africa, the Middle East, and parts of Asia.
Thousands of demonstrators took to the streets of Germany's eastern city of Leipzig to call for tolerance in the wake of anti-immigrant protests organized by Legida, a local offshoot of the German right-wing nationalist group Pegida. Anti-immigrant groups have long been protesting what they call the Islamization of the West, and reports of the New Year's Eve attacks on women in Cologne and other cities have boosted their cause.
And these muslimischen Flüchtlinge.
These Muslim refugees have begun a generalized terrorist attack, an attack against German women, against white, blonde women.
Xenophobic mobs were blamed for a series of attacks against Pakistani, Syrian, and African men in Cologne Sunday night. But many women came out to protest the violence.
What Pegida does today makes me angry. We all know that Pegida and hooligans who gathered today couldn't care less about women's rights. They always come here to beat foreigners. For them, it's about doing propaganda, not fighting sexism.
Meanwhile, Swedish media reports accused the police of trying to cover up the fact that immigrants were behind most holiday attacks there. National Police Chief Dan Eliasson said Monday the allegations will be investigated.
We have to get to the bottom of this. If there is any veracity to this information, it has to be remedied, and we have to see if someone has done wrong.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel said the uncontrolled immigration flow has to be stemmed.
We have to intensify the fight against the causes that make people flee. And then we will be able, and that is what we want for this year, to noticeably reduce the number of refugees. That is clear, because we also have the task to integrate them. That is what everyone talks about here. What would be the best integration method? And we know, since the terrible events that night in Cologne, that for integration, we need the openness of the society, but the refugees also need to be willing to follow our rules and values as well.
For some people who grew up in the culture of chaos and violence, it may be the hardest part of the integration. Zlatica Hook, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
A London-based company is using an inexpensive, faster way for making orthotics, the braces and supports that help children and people with disabilities. Navid Parvez is co-founder of Andiamo with partner Samia Parvez.
We create 3D printed orthotics, which are custom bracing for the outside of the body. We do that specifically for children. And we use 3D scanning alongside 3D printing.
Traditional orthotics can be cumbersome with an uncomfortable plaster fitting process and a lengthy wait for the brace. For Andiamo's orthotics, a quick scan becomes a highly accurate 3D image that can become any 3D printed device, according to Samia Parvez.
We're talking about back braces, hand splints, leg splints, anything that supports your posture.
An estimated 100 million people worldwide need orthotics devices. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Lippin. Well, fine dining is usually reserved for those who can afford the typically costly meals. But in the U.S. Midwestern city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, some of the top restaurants are donating gourmet meals to a local homeless shelter. International Edition's David Byrd has that story.
Sanford Restaurant is considered one of the best upscale eating establishments in the Midwestern United States. Its menu includes such items as char-grilled loin of elk with maple polenta, balsamic grilled romaine, and tart cherry reduction, or lacquered quail and crisp veal sweetbread with grilled peach and braised collards. But now Sanford is one of eight fine restaurants that provide meals for the city's largest publicly funded homeless shelter, the Guest House. Volunteer Dale Ryan helped start the project in 2011 when he saw what some of the men at the Guest House were eating. He says a good meal is a very practical way to help the men get their lives back together.
Food goes right to the brain. These guys need nutrition to get their lives back and to be able to go out on the street, find work, and get their health back.
Ryan, who used to work in the food industry, approached some of his friends in the restaurant business. He says that he was surprised by their willingness to help.
I would sometimes go home at night and find that I would be crying in the car because I was so overwhelmed because I was not getting any rejections.
The meals the men at the Guest House receive are the same quality that paying customers at Sanford and other restaurants receive. Chef Justin Aprahamian, a winner of the prestigious James Beard Award, says that he and his crew take special care when preparing meals for the Guest House.
We take a lot of pride in what we send over to the Guest House. You know, we're not cutting corners on anything we're making for them. I mean, we're shopping at the same farmers markets and ordering from the same purveyors.
On this particular night, Aprahamian is making a cassoulet.
Cassoulet is kind of a classic French stew where you get a combination of, you know, it would be some duck meat, classically sausage, pork, beans, and you know, a bunch of vegetables kind of all stewed together.
Guest House resident Billy Pollard says the meals he and other residents enjoy are always something special.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. That was really good. I like the way they cook that food. I like the way they prepare it too.
Robert Howard is another Guest House resident who is on the verge of leaving the shelter after being off heroin for nearly 2 years.
Yeah, I can tell it's not like a person that made it from home. It tastes better than that. I don't know that much.
Howard says that even when he is out of the Guest House, he will make sure to schedule return visits on the gourmet nights. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And that's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. Your director today was Tracy Carter, and the engineer was Dan Crafton. Do join us again at 4:30 Universal Time for the next International Edition, wrapping up the President's State of the Union Address. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. We'll catch you later.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For the fourth time since 2006, North Korea has tested a nuclear bomb. Although international observers have not confirmed the device was what North Korea claims it to have been, a miniaturized hydrogen bomb, a White House spokesperson said any kind of nuclear test by North Korea was provocative and a flagrant violation of multiple UN Security Council resolutions. Countries around the world, including the United States, China, and Russia, condemned the test, and an emergency session of the United Nations Security Council was called. The Security Council also strongly condemned it, calling the nuclear test by North Korea a clear threat to international peace and security, and pledging to begin to work immediately on further significant measures to address the situation. U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby said the international community must impose real consequences for the regime's destabilizing behavior and respond with enhanced pressure. The Security Council has a key role to play in holding North Korea accountable by imposing a tough, comprehensive, and credible package of new sanctions, and by ensuring rigorous enforcement of the resolutions it has already adopted. Secretary of State John Kerry spoke with his counterparts both in the region and elsewhere over North Korea's nuclear test. He emphasized the need for an international response to the threat posed by North Korea and pledged to continue to protect our allies in the region, including the Republic of Korea and Japan. U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations Samantha Power said in a written statement that North Korea has increasingly isolated itself and impoverished its people through its reckless pursuit of weapons of mass destruction. The United States remains fully committed to the peaceful denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, said Ambassador Power. We will take all actions necessary to protect our security, defend our allies, and promote regional stability.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.